Mr. Hunter sent me. I've to help the new folks settle in. He thinks the mighty siller. Their mail come in with an Indian stamp, and that new stable loan from Migri Dairy had let slip that any of the Migri estate carts is to flit their gear. His aunt gave a dry shrug and handed her nephew a kitchen knife. She didn't actively dislike children, but had none herself, leastways none that had lived. After 4 miscarriages and 1 sickly girl who had died at 6 weeks old, her husband Adam consoled her by saying that they'd never have his sister Effie's worries, which only increased with years. Nane of the joy, but nane of the pains neither. It's likely we'll get the better deal out of life, he told her. She looked at Billy with shrewd eyes. At least he could work from home, unlike poor Charlotte, the eldest. 15 years old and with the mind of a child. Poor Effie tied her to the bed when her mother went out washing. Sissy gave Billy a nudge to get cracking. Well, if you're sitting here sharing my heat and my nice warm fire, you can share my work as well. The tatties need pairing. Sir Clive's here in hotch-potch today with a fine breed pudding for after. Settled at the table, Billy began the pairing, knowing that he would not have too long to wait. Migri Estate would want its haulage cart back as soon as possible from its irregular duty. He hadn't been working 10 minutes before the clatter of horseshoes and the clanking of harness rang out from the end of Greyfriars Road. With a clatter and a hup, Henry Christie steered the horses round the corner and into the lane. Billy knew him straight away, having seen him in the shop on mark days buying provisions and sometimes treats for his children. He was the farmer of Nether Migri, and one of the many tenant farmers in the Migri estate. Henry was nearer 50 than 40, a red-cheeked, jovial, powerfully built man, tall with a greying beard and full moustache. His hands at the reins were calloused, the nails rough from outside work. Henry had a large family, some said as many as 19, though not all living, and he often joked that there were only 2 things he never tired of, a nice slab of gingerbread cake and the love of his wife Ida. It was not Ida who was with him today, though. Seated alongside Henry were his youngest son George, a brosy 5-year-old boy, busily denting his leather boots in time to the horse's clop, and his daughter Lizzie, a 17-year-old girl, holding tightly to her hat. Both children had their parents' black hair, in George's case a mop of unruly curls. His sister, on the other hand, was quite the country beauty, well-formed, with plump arms and a jacket with leg-of-mutton sleeves and a long, tight-waisted tweed skirt. Her boots had polished buttons, a little muddied from the farm, but they shone like glass above the tide marks of the glar. Her hair was parted in the middle and pinned up under her bonnet in heavy pleats, a few stray curls escaping down her neck, as she was jolted and jiggled rudely by the cart, lumbering over the uneven camber of the road. She was carrying a tortoiseshell-handled purse, which she snapped open as the cart heaved to a halt, taking out what Billy saw was a key. They had barely reined the horses to a halt when he was out at the door offering his services free. "Oh, I'm nae the chiel to take charity off a bairn. There'll be a wee something in it for ye," laughed the farmer. "Tak the key, Lizzie," he said, lifting his daughter from the cart as lightly as if she'd been a forkful of hay, "and get yourself upstairs to help with the unpacking. The laddie here can help you licht the fire and keep wee George amused. I had the lum swept last Wednesday. There's breams and dustpans up there already." Billy went racing ahead of Lizzie Christie and her little brother George, up the dark linoleum stairs, past his aunt and uncle's servant rooms, and then to the top flat. Some work had already been done in the vacant premises. There were muslin curtains at the windows, and 2 bricks placed in each hearth to reduce the space needed for the fire. The coal scuttle itself was a shining brass affair, with trumpeting elephants and palm trees hammered into its surface. There was a brass inlaid clock, a small piano, and green twill curtains. Altogether, the apartment had 4 rooms, 1 large bedroom, a smaller one, a living room come study, and a small but serviceable kitchen. The landing had an inside lavatory for the sole use of the new tenants. Sir Clive's servants, the Ducats, would use the outside privy adjacent to the wash house and coal shed in the garden. The grounds of Glenkendall were marked off by a stout fence with a white-painted grate, through which Adam Ducat entered to work in the grounds, pruning trees, weeding, and performing any handyman jobs required by Sir Clive. His wife Sissy also took this short route daily to deliver the meal she prepared to Sir Clive's nurse, Jean Burnett. It took only moments for Lizzie Christie to decide that Billy's main job that morning should be looking after George. She had already fished her brother repeatedly out of numerous tea chests full of household belongings, his little hands being desperate to forage through everything. Billy, however, had other ideas than to care for the boy. "My Aunt Sissy's just downstairs. She could watch the wee laddie while I help you." Having disposed of that problem, Billy launched forth with a list of ways his relatives could be of service to the newcomers, for a prearranged fee, of course, as he set about making up fires to air each room, using the bellows to coax the flames alive. And in the course of the morning, he managed to ferret out of Lizzie that she was employed to act as housekeeper companion to her cousin, Miss Kate Christie, an 18-year-old young lady who had been born on a tea plantation in Darjeeling. Kate had just been enrolled as a medical student at Devana University by her father, William. He had written personally to the dean of the medical faculty, assuring him that, despite her sex, his daughter was a diligent scholar who wished to succeed in her chosen career and would apply herself as hard as any male colleague to her studies. Billy also discovered that Kate was to be arriving by the evening train. Henry Christie made two more trips from his farm to Greyfriars Lane before stepping into the Ducat's parlour to engage Sissy as occasional cook, should Miss Kate Christie wish to entertain guests, as Lizzie's culinary skills were limited. It was agreed that Effie McCombie would undertake the washing for the small household and that her brother Adam would carry out any heavy work required by the two girls. Little George, meantime, was happily settled on the Ducat's floor, playing with pots and pans, and refused to budge, setting up a whining and a wailing that would have deafened Beelzebub until his father relented and gave permission for him to stay overnight with his sister Lizzie, so that he could meet his cousin Kate. George was quite certain that she would be bringing him a tiger from India at the very least. Nothing could persuade him otherwise. His duties over, Billy pocketed the half-crown handed to him by Mr. Hunter and raced back to the grocery shop like a kettle desperate to boil. "Oh, they've got a grand feather cloak and a chiffonier and a looking-glass and Persian carpets and a bloody great piano and chintz curtains and covers and there's chairs and a sofa and a bookcase as big as Ma's beds and a new boots to slate a quarry and a leather-top desk with drawers, and a rocking chair and floors in the mantelpiece with three brass monkeys on each side, silver candles each end and a horrible-looking elephant in the corner, half-man with muckle lugs and a trunk and a skeleton." Mary and Mr. Hunter were quite overcome by this announcement. "I should think they are worth a bob or twa, especially Miss Kate Christie," the grocer announced. "Ye did weel, Billy. Noo, just lug that sack of sugar roon the back."